Welcome to the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast with your hosts, Corndog and Eric. You have tuned in to the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast, episode number 72, August 18th, 2022. I am Corndog, sitting here with my buddy and co-host, Eric. How's it going, Eric?
Hey, doing good. Thank you all for tuning in.
Once again, another night, Eric wanted me to cancel the show, or wanted us to cancel the show and go riding. We got rain out here. It's been raining a lot here in Lincoln County.
It's amazing. I went riding this morning. It rained super hard last night, and I went for a little ride this morning, and man, traction for days. Just got to be careful. All the washes are washed out, and there's a lot of square edges and rain ruts and ditches and stuff, so you really got to pay attention, but man, is it epic.
Yeah, it looks like I'm going tomorrow morning with a couple friends.
Lucky.
Yep, so.
Nice.
What else you been doing lately?
Oh, man. Working, mostly. Just mainly
what,
been.
What is that?
Mainly been working a lot. Other than that, that's about it, man. Work.
Yep.
How about you?
Living the dream, man.
Traveling the world.
I've been in Vegas last week and kind of like being in there because membership of the gym, so I've hit the gym like 5 times this week. A little too hot down there to ride my bicycle.
Yeah, I was down there yesterday. It was like 110.
Yep.
And humid now.
Oh, yeah.
A little brutal.
Heading for a ride in the morning and then going up to the cabin in Duck Creek, Utah for the weekend. And be back here home for a night. Heading back to Vegas Monday. Actually have an appointment. I bought new rims and tires for the moto van.
Nice.
So they get put on Sunday, or they get put on Tuesday. Anyway, so I'm kind of excited about that. I didn't want to do it yet, but I needed new tires that looked like full of cracks, so I always said if once I get tires, I was going to get rims, so I bit the bullet.
Sweet. Very nice. Well, how about the Vegas to Reno this past weekend?
Yeah.
Did you hear much about that?
Yes and no. It seemed like everything was okay as far as riders. It seemed like there was a lot of the UTV and truck things crashed. And, I think in the bike, Skylar Howes overhauled it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, really good ride Skylar put on.
I know they had to, last minute, they changed the start to the pit one, I think it was. And I guess there was a little confusion with some of the pit stops for the chase vehicles. Not sure the whole story on that.
Not only from start to pit one, but then it like somewhere in the middle there, just outside of Tonopah, they actually had to load back up in the trailers and trailer up to the next section. They had to bypass a section, of course, that was underwater.
So. Was that for the trucks and UTVs and everything too?
Bikes, wow. Trucks, everything, yeah.
And that had to have been mayhem right there. Yeah. How do you keep contract?
Yeah, logistically, that's a pretty tough challenge for the trucks and cars and bikes and everything to do. But then on top of that, to score it properly, I don't know, it just opens up a lot of concern. But I didn't hear a whole lot of discontent with it. I don't know how the racers liked that. I guess hit us up, let us know if you liked it or didn't like it. But also, I think on their maps, there were some pits that they showed at certain mileage or whatever on the maps, and it ended up not being there. Anyway, there were some issues at this year's Vegas to Reno. on top of that, all the rain and water they dealt with, that had to have been pretty tough. So
it's a lot of work that goes into it. It's probably pretty difficult to have 100% great event.
Yeah, it's tough.
At least without upsetting somebody.
Yep. But anyways, it takes a special person to pull it off.
Right. What else is coming up? Oh, we got the Moran Wild Bunch Night Race. It's August 20th in Laughlin. That might be pretty cool.
Yeah, that's this weekend.
Is that this weekend?
We were going to race it, but we decided not to. But yeah, last round of the night series for Moran out in Laughlin, Nevada. Actually looked like it would be a pretty fun one.
Yeah, especially with all this rain down there and that sandy, gritty dirt.
Yeah.
It'd probably hook up pretty good.
It would be pretty rad. So
watch out for the Choya.
Yeah, watch out for the Choya. Take your comb.
And then we've got our buddy that we had on the last episode. It was last episode, Paul Hart? Was that the last episode?
Two episodes ago.
Yeah. They're doing a fundraiser for him up in North California and at Scott Rabineau's residence to get him to the Baja 1000. He's racing the Ironman. I think he's sitting third in points in the Ironman class is what he said. And anyways, August 27th, if you guys want to attend that, go to Paul Hart's Facebook or Instagram or Scott Rabineau. Let's see. Oh, the second annual Handstands 100. That's who was on last week, Johnny and Scott. That's coming up here pretty soon, towards the end of September. Looks like Eric and I are going to be heading down there representing the Ground Shakers, Moran, and possibly do some podcasting.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time.
Yep. And I got an email from them today, and there's some pretty neat stuff they're doing. And they're going to be releasing all that information tomorrow. So make sure you guys check out and look for the Handstands 100. What else? Just want to give a shout out to my nephew, Gary Smith. It's getting really close to him heading out of town, heading to France for the ISDE. I know if you want to help support him, they're going to make another run of the t-shirts. Takamoto's helping him out. And if you want to order a shirt, go to the Takamoto website. I think it's takamoto.co. I think that's how you would find them. Or they're on Instagram, Facebook. Anyways, go get them, Gary. Good luck. Bring home the gold.
Yeah, he's been putting in a lot of work. And I'm excited to see how he does. I think he's going to do well, and I hope he enjoys it. It's going to be a epic adventure.
Get the gold.
Go get it, Gary.
Race coming up here in a few weeks, kind of a little ways out. Actually, this weekend, I think it's this weekend, or was it this last weekend? The NGPC is up there at Cache Valley.
Yep, it's this weekend, the 20th.
Idaho. And then September 16th through the 18th, the Works race is going there. I'll be there in attendance racing. It's rounds 7 and 8. So round 7 is on Saturday, round 8 is on Sunday, practice Friday. Trying to talk Eric into going up there. It'll be fun. And it's also birthday weekend. I'm going to be 32. Liar.
Something like that.
And
I don't even know how old Corndog is anymore because he just keeps throwing out numbers and it's never the same. But anyway, yeah. Want to give a huge thank you to one of our new sponsors and partners in the podcast, and that is takamoto.co. Takamoto.co.
Dude, he's changing our game.
Yeah, he stepped up big time. He's hooking us up with some equipment that we really needed to take this thing to the next level. So huge shout out to Takamoto. Those guys are awesome. I've been checking out a bunch of his YouTube videos. He's got, if you're dealing with KTM stuff, he's got parts kits, upgrade kits. If there's a mod that can be done to make that bike better, he pretty much knows about it, focuses on that. That's his kind of his bread and butter is the KTM modifications and upgrades. So go check out some of his YouTube videos. He does tech videos. He does parts comparison videos, all kinds of really cool stuff. Learn some neat stuff about the ECUs and whatnot from him. So Mike over at Taco Moto has really stepped up, and we just want to say thank you. Yeah. Thank you from the Desert Dirt Biker podcast, and support those that keep this show rolling. So looking forward to a great future with Taco Moto.
Yep. We'll be having him on the guest here on an episode here soon in the near future. Can't wait to hear his story. We've sat down and rode with him a couple times and did the Nevada 200, but to hear his actual story, that's what's neat.
Yeah, he's a really interesting, really cool guy. First time I met him was at the trail ride there in Caliente, the Nevada 200 trail ride. Actually met him in person there. I kind of knew a little bit about him before then, just through some videos and social media stuff. But he is a really neat guy and has a ton of knowledge on bikes and in specific the KTM. So I'm sure we'll have more to come with him, and looking forward to that. But thank you, Mike, for all your support.
Yeah, huge, huge. Well, should we go get this week's guest on?
Yeah, let's go get Taylor. This is this week's guest, Taylor Stevens, really good friend of mine, and super fast, awesome rider. Looking forward to hearing his story.
Yeah.
Let's go get him.
All right. Hold on. We'll get Taylor on the phone.
All right. All you happy dirt bike listeners out there, we have Taylor Stevens on the phone. Hey, Taylor, Eric and Corndog sitting here. How you doing?
Good. And you?
Good.
What's up, Taylor?
Not much.
So how's the weather up there? You been doing any riding lately?
No, I haven't been riding lately. I think I'm kind of burnt out. Like I only ride when I race now.
Yeah. I think we all get there every once in a while.
You're on that Dave Pearson program. Show up and race.
Only if we were that fast though.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Well, let's tell our listeners who you are and where you're from and what got you into dirt bikes.
My name's Taylor Stevens. I'm from Wyoming, and what got me into dirt bikes was probably my dad the most, just getting me a dirt bike and watching him race as I was growing up. Like, I remember when I was pretty young, we used to go to Vegas to Reno, and he used to Iron Man it, and I used to be, man, that would be sick. I'd see, like, the Honda team there, and it was just, like, a dream to even race that race, and then from there, it would be a dream just to even become, like, a pro like them, but obviously there's no support like that anymore, but yeah.
Cool. Well, how old were you when you finally got on your first bike?
Just 3 or 4.
Okay. And what bike was that?
There's a Yamaha PW50.
Nice. And did you just ride around in the backyard when you went to dad's house, or did you immediately get on it and go race?
So where my dad from is Coppermine, which is above Page, Arizona. That's where I got the bike, and I ended up riding it around on the res a little bit. And I guess when I was little, my aunt told me, I complained, like, I don't want to get on the bike. It scared me. But once I got on it, it was fine.
Yeah.
And then after that, I think a little after that was Rhino Rally, and my dad ended up signing me up, and we tried to go racing, and I ended up going down like ended up going down pretty good, and then somebody ran me over on an 85.
Oh.
And after that, I decided to call it a quits.
Threw in the towel, huh? Not riding no more dirt bikes.
Yeah, not riding anymore. And I didn't know any better then. And I was just like, it's not for me right now.
Well, obviously you got back on the bike because you've got some pretty big accomplishments and you're still out there chasing it. And so what was that turning point when you got back on your bike?
I went up to Wyoming again. I think I was in fifth or sixth grade, and my dad got me a JR80, and I ended up riding it around the res up there. And that's all I did basically the whole summer was ride it. It was so much fun, and I had to go back down to my mom's. I didn't ride again until me and my sister ended up going up there because my mom really couldn't support us then. And then that Christmas, my dad ended up getting me an RM85. And we went riding that same day on Christmas, and there were some dry spots, but the ground was still frozen in Wyoming. I ended up flooding the bike. Like, I think I only rode like half a mile to a mile, and I flooded the bike. And my dad's like, you got to stay on it, because I was just kind of putting around and wasn't cleaning out the bike. That's how slow I was. And then I just rode it a little bit, like one or two more times, and then I think we waited until spring, and my dad's old wife up there, we went to her sister's house, and we rode it again. But I was riding. My dad's like, just ride it slow. You still got to break it in. And I went on a flat road, and I was just pinning it first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and I blew the bike up.
Oh, no. Brand new bike.
Yeah, brand new bike. My dad was pissed. He's like, I told you to go slow. And I didn't know, like, you had to break it in or anything.
Right.
And then my dad took it to the shop to see if they could warranty it. And they ended up warranting the bike. But after that, I kept riding, but I broke it in, obviously. But every time I'd ride it, I almost, like, flood the bike because I was. And then my very first race, I think it was Knowles. It was a USRA desert race.
Okay.
I was racing, and I think I was the last 85 novice, and the 65s were about to pass me. And I think it was Braden Bland, Benji Knight, someone out, but it was three KTMs. And I was like, man, those little bikes passed me. Like, I was going so slow. I think I got, like, last place or second to last.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's in Utah, right?
Yeah, that's in Utah, yeah.
Right on. So that was your first race, huh?
Yeah.
First race back after your little PW50 incident.
Yeah, after my PW50.
So then, were you stoked about staying on a bike or just doing it to do it? Or how did you feel about that?
I think then I was just stoked to do it. Because I remember, watching my dad at Vegas Torino. And I was like, I don't think I'll ever be that good. But I remember I think I only did that race. And the race after that was, I think it was Bull Hollow and not St. George, it's closer to below Moab. And I went there again. That was my second race. I think I ended up flooding my bike twice, and I had to change the spark plug while I was running. And some person came up and helped me, like, well, you know, I changed the spark plug. I was like, yeah, I flood my bike a lot. That's how slow I was. And it was crazy. I think that's the only race my dad took me to until 2 years later. I think I was in eighth year, or a year and a half later, because he said it wasn't worth the money to drive down there and get last place.
Good incentive, Dad.
Yeah, and then I came back again. I think I was in eighth grade. I raced Cherry Creek. It was one of the nationals, and I think I passed all the way up to like fifth 85 novice. I passed a couple 85 amateurs, I think one expert, and then I moved into third, and I think it was the last lap, and my dad and I decided to let me go see if I could catch more people, because it was the last lap, but I ended up running out of gas.
Oh, no.
But actually, I think his friend told him to let me go, but he wanted to pit me, so he just let me go, and I ran out of gas, and that's when I started to be, I was like really getting into it. And I was like, this is so much fun. I want to do more. And I ended up doing the last race in Page, same series, USRA. I think I got second 85 novice. And then I moved up to a big bike. Actually, it was a 300. It was my dad's 300. He let me race it at Mesquite. It was the beginning of the year again. And I ended up getting stuck on a hill. I couldn't make it up this hill. I mean, there was a big pile up. I don't even think they race this area in Mesquite anymore. It's kind of close to the river. I remember we crossed the river. And that's where I ended up breaking his 300. I just couldn't get it up the hill. And I think it was just too heavy or wasn't the right bike for me. And my dad ended up getting me a 125. And then I raced that rest of the year and the following year. But the following.
You still there?
Jeez, that sucks.
There you are.
I think it's when. Cut this out. I think it's when my screen shuts off.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't let your screen fall asleep.
Yeah. I got to keep clicking it. But what did I say last?
So just tell us. So how old were you when you were on the 300?
I think I was 13.
Dang, dude. Yeah, that's a lot of bike for a 13-year-old. And you couldn't have been more than 100 pounds or something, huh?
Yeah. No, actually, I was a fat kid. I weighed.
Really?
I think I was like 165, 170, had a big belly.
Holy smokes, dude.
I wouldn't imagine that at all.
I wouldn't guess that, yeah.
Yeah, I was a pretty chubby kid.
That's funny.
But I think I was starting to grow then a little bit. So it kind of like started to disappear. But that bike was a little too much for me. I got that 125. And then we ended up racing the rest of the season. I was finishing maybe in top 15 novice. And then the following year, I think I was 14 then. 14 or 15. Ended up overalling the novice. And then finishing like all the way up to maybe top 40 overall bikes. And back then there used to be about 300 or 400 bikes.
Wow.
In the Utah series.
What do you think it was that made it click where you just kind of went from flooding out your bike from going so slow to kicking butt? What do you think was that click?
I think it was a Dust to Glory in a Suburban, watching as we were driving to different cities or places. Yeah,
just motivated you, huh?
Yeah, Dust to Glory motivated me, and I would just sit there and be like, oh, that would be so sick to like even race that race or just be like those guys like Johnny Campbell, Steve Hangeville.
Right.
Dude, that movie Mouse motivated everybody. That movie was so good. And
yeah. There's a lot of people that credit that movie to their breaking point or even getting on a bike or making that leap to be faster like it did you.
Yeah, I remember as a kid at my stepmom's place, my little brother, me and him would pedal bikes after work or after school, and we'd pretend I'd be like Baja 1 million, Baja 2 million, we just keep going. Like I was telling my dad that, like I think it was not even that long ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was like, yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I'd be like dreaming like Baja 1 million, Baja 2 million. He just kind of smiled. Now, like, yeah, it was pretty crazy. But yeah, that movie motivated me. And just like the times the Utah series came to the National came to Utah, I used to see the pros and I'd be like, man, it would be sick just to be like them and riding for a living. But as I got older, obviously the teams, there's not as many teams and not as many rides, and I think we're jumping too far ahead. Anyways. So no, when I was on 125, maybe I didn't finish 40th. I think it was around 70th, but we used to write in a notebook. We still have that notebook in Wyoming. And there used to be like 300 or 400 racers. It was sick.
Wow.
Yeah. And I ended up getting the overall novice championship that year for Utah. And then I moved up to amateur, and my dad got me a 144, but it wasn't brand new. Like we'd get bikes are a year or 2 years older, so they were cheaper. Because this is around like right after the recession. It was about then, like people were still recovering.
Right.
But it was still a brand new bike, like even though it was 2 years old or a year old.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And we ended up going racing on that. And I think I overhauled the first three races on that bike. And we couldn't keep keep it from blowing up when I was practicing or anything like that. Oh, did I lose you guys?
No, nope. We got you.
So my dad ended up getting me a 250F. And I think it was Firebirds Utah race. It was my first race on it. And I ended up getting a bad start. I couldn't keep it running. It was a four stroke. So I think every time I shut off, I couldn't start it for literally sometimes it'd be like 5 minutes. I'd just be out there kicking it. And it was a carburetor. It wasn't fuel injected yet. Man, it was the biggest pain in the butt. And I think every race after that, I was maybe like 10th or 15th, 20th amateur, just trying to figure out the bike. I didn't blow it up, so that was the only good thing.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keys to keep it running.
I remember those days just sitting in the desert kicking the old four strokes, the early carbureted four strokes, man.
Yeah.
The hot start and all that, and you're just kicking and kicking and kicking. There's nothing worse.
Yeah. I don't mean to be mean to KTM, but I mean, back then their bikes, I don't think they ran very, like, couldn't start very good or something.
Yeah, no, they've come a long ways from where they were in the early 2000s to today.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, but.
Yeah. But anyways, I moved
so
up.
Did you have any success on that bike or?
No, I never had any success on that bike.
Kind of.
Besides not blowing up.
That thing didn't treat you too good, huh?
Yeah, I kind of lost some speed. Like I said, I think I got like three overall amateur races in the USRA series. But after that, I just fell back super hard.
Wow.
So what was the game plan after that? Did you guys regroup and get a different bike or?
Yeah, we traded. Well, we sold the 125, 144. And then we traded in the 250F. What bike did I go to next? I think I went to another 250F, but it was fuel injected.
Okay.
And by this time, I think I was like 17. And I was racing the expert class, 250 expert. And I guess I wasn't, I don't know. I think I didn't take it as serious, but I would just go to the races still. The ones we made it to. And then when I was 18, let me see. I think I was still racing 250 expert. We just went to the races we could make it to. And I kind of stayed in the same area. I think I'd finished like top 10 expert, top 15, top 20 expert around there. I don't know the exact results. And then I didn't really take it serious until I was going to college in Utah. And I was like, this is it, or else I'm not going to make it. So I ended up racing 250 Pro. I think I got like three podiums or four.
And that's all in USRA?
Oh, no, that was in the Hare and Hounds.
Nationals.
Yeah, the Nationals. Ended up racing Pro 250 because in USRA, back then, they didn't have a pro class. It was just expert, and that was it.
Okay.
So when I did move up to expert, I guess that was the peak of it for USRA, but I was not like winning races or anything like that. But around 20, I started taking it serious and I got some podiums and Husky gave me like a support ride. Like they gave me a discount on a bike and then they gave me a parts allowance. But this wouldn't be possible without Jason and his brother down at the old Pro Cycle. Because I guess someone called them and said, hey, do you know a 250 rider? We're trying to get Husky out here. I mean.
That was in Vegas? Hey, we lost you.
There you are. Sorry, everybody, for the bad connection.
So that was in Vegas?
Oh, no. So Pro Cycle, Remember from Saint Cloud to St. George?
St. George, yeah.
Yeah. So they would, Jason and his brother, they got me a deal through Husky. So I got like a discount on bikes, parts allowance.
Nice.
And that really motivated me a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would.
Yeah, and I obviously with the help of my dad too, he got me the bike. And I think I got some Pro 250 podiums, like I said. And I think I got some top 10 finishes in the Hare and Hound series, mainly in Utah, because that's where I rode the most, I raced the most. Then I didn't live in Utah, but yeah, I was doing good. And I remember in 2014, I'm kind of jumping around. David let me race his bike at the Henderson 250 in 2014. And I ended up, I was leading the expert class and I started like sixth open expert. I was going to team race with my dad. I thought he wanted to race one lap, but I ended up passing all the experts. I think the over 30, over 40 pro and the 250 pro. I think there was only three more bikes in front of me. I believe it was Nick Burson, and I forgot who was teaming up. Robbie Bell and David were in front of me. And I think I was the next one, or there was one more bike between us. And
nice. Wow.
Actually, no, wait. David wasn't racing because he's in the water truck. Sorry. But Robbie was racing with someone. I don't remember who he's racing with. But yeah, I was in fourth overall. And I let my dad jump on the bike because I thought he wanted to race too. And then we ended up falling behind. And I tried to catch back up on the third lap. But I don't remember how we finished. Nice. I think we were like third expert. And then I don't know what overall. Probably like top 10, top 12.
That's still pretty good. And how great is that to be able to team up with your dad? That would be so awesome.
Yeah, it's probably my greatest memory of racing, just teaming up with him and watching him as I was growing up. Like I said, like I think the greatest memory was racing Vegas Torino when I was a novice still, overall in the novices. I was like, I think I was 15 then. We raced Vegas Torino, and we got third four-stroke expert. And I thought it was the sickest thing ever because I remember as a kid, I was like, this just a chubby Indian kid on the sideline, be like eating food or something. Eating fry bread. No, I'm just kidding.
Fry bread.
But I was on the sidelines and I was racing it that year. And it was a great experience. And I think every year after that, we raced Vegas Torino. Like it was just like a little family thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I raced with him again the next year. But our rider ended up, giving up. I don't know. He said something was wrong with the bike, but when me and my dad took the bike home, it ran fine and everything. I think he was just scared of the dark and the trucks were going to catch us. Because the second year, my dad ended up breaking his arm because I guess people got lost and they were going backwards on the course at race speed.
Ooh. Oh, man.
And he had a head on.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, your dad's a pretty cool guy. I've hung out with you guys at the races and
super cool.
And been involved with some teams and stuff with you guys. And your dad and your sister are both great. I love you guys. I mean, you guys are good people.
Yeah. You're a good person too, Corn Dog.
Well, thank you. Even though I give you crap all the time.
Yeah. It's fun. Definitely some good times, though.
Oh, yeah. Good times. So where'd you go after that? I mean, that was about your 20-year-old or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to college. And I remember David, anyways, at the Henderson race, we were teasing David, yeah, let's team up for Vegas Torino. And I guess my dad got a call or text from him or something like 2 months before the race. I said, hey, I'm down. Let's do it. So I was like, oh, this is going to be sick. And I started getting ready. We started practicing. And then right before the race, I think I went over to David's house.
Dave Pearson?
Yeah, David Pearson.
Yeah.
Ended up staying at his house for a couple of days. He gave me some, like, lines and ideas, what to do, what not to do. And we ended up doing some bibs, too, as well, getting it ready for the race. And then we ended up heading down to the race. Well, actually went back up to Wyoming, finished getting everything ready. And then we went back down to the race. And I was pretty nervous for that race, but I wasn't like super nervous. I was kind of excited. But I was just nervous because I was racing with David. And
big shoes to fill.
Yeah, big shoes to fill.
Who started that race?
David started.
Right.
And okay. He came in and his the Shroud number plate came off. And we were trying to fix it. And by that time, they were pretty close. Max and Shane Esposito were pretty close. I hopped on the bike, and I don't know if I should say this over the podcast. But yeah, some stuff happened. I jumped right out in front of first, and Max Eddie, he passed me before the resume race speed sign. He's a good guy, but I was kind of frustrated about it. But it's racing. People right. do it all the time now. I even do it now. But yeah, I used to be pretty frustrated when people did that, but he ended up getting right in front of me. We both took off. We were both on the same bike, I think, same year and everything. And I was like gaining on him just like millimeters, maybe centimeters. And he cut me off, like jumped on my side of the road, ended up chopping the throttle. And then Shane Esposito just went by both of us like nothing. Like we were standing still. Like his bike had that much power. Like we were still shifting through the gears. And Shane Esposito just flew by us.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a pit two where we start now, Bonnie Claire. Well, it used to be pit two, but yeah. And then I just followed their dust. And then we used to head into the mountain. And there was a speed zone. People probably know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know where you're at.
Yeah, but anyway, before that speed zone, you make a left and you go up that straightaway. And I literally had the bike pinned and I was tucking and they were pulling away from me on a flat road.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was like, maybe it was just me though. Maybe I don't know. But we ended up going up the hill, the speed zone, coming back down the mountain. And they were quite a ways ahead of me, but you could still see pretty bad dust spots. And I can't really remember, but I felt like I was catching up to them, or at least one of them, because I think Shane was kind of like maybe a minute and a half ahead of, maybe a minute ahead of Max, just because of the dust and the sun. But yeah. I see myself catching back up, and I ended up hitting something. And one thing I learned is don't ride when you're frustrated, because I was frustrated because of what happened in the pit.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah.
And, were you in the dust when you hit the
Yeah, because back then, pit two, I think the sun was barely coming up, and you were heading back down the mountain, so you're heading towards the sun.
I've ridden that section in the morning. After you come out of the speed zone, you drop down that windy mountain, and then you get into, like, some flowy washes, but you're heading straight into the sun.
Yeah.
And the dust in that wash is just brutal.
Yeah.
Just hangs.
Yeah, but I'm all good with those guys now. Like, I got nothing against them. It's racing. Like I said, I do that now. And then, yeah, I ended up going down and I don't really remember. Broke my femur. I don't really remember what happened. Right? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But I don't really remember Justin Morgan's face, but he told me he thought I was dead and he almost ran over my head, but he didn't tell me this till 2 years after the accident. He almost ran over my head. And he thought I was dead. And I guess I woke up and kept going to sleep probably, I don't know how many times, because I think the next rider stopped and Justin took off again and everyone just kept doing that. They would stop and then the next rider would go. Luckily everyone was nice, but, everyone said I was in and out of it. Like, I don't remember some of the faces, and some faces I remember.
Yeah.
And I remember the helicopter coming in. And I remember the trucks were almost there. So it was like I was literally laying there for like 3 hours.
Holy cow.
And I was in so much pain. I remember grabbing – the dirt was hot, but I was grabbing. Like, I was squeezing it. was how much pain I was in, because it's been that long since I got like any like good medication shots. But I guess I already had two of them, and the helicopter landed and they told me they're going to give me another shot. It's going to knock me out. And I was like, well, don't give me another shot. So they put me on the, I forgot what it's called. Do you guys know what it's called? Where they lay you on?
What, the gurney?
Yeah, I think it's a gurney, yeah.
Or a backboard.
Oh, no, it was a backboard.
Yeah.
But I remember them sliding a blanket under me, and David was there. And I think he was holding my hand, too. He was being a great guy. And I was in so much pain. But anyways, they started moving me, and I was screaming so loud. I was in so much pain. I was like, man, this hurts. Mm. And I got on the board, and then they started walking me to the helicopter. And I guess David almost stepped on a rattlesnake, and it was right by my head, too. So,
holy cow. That was,
yeah. So I got on the helicopter. Got on the helicopter. I didn't really think nothing of it. Because I was in so much pain. But once I got on the helicopter, everything started to feel good and got to Vegas. And I remember that night, they didn't give me any medication because they said I was going to have surgery that night or early in the morning. And I remember my dad getting to the hospital and I was like shaking. I was like, I'm in so much pain. They need to give me medication. And he kept asking people, but they'd be like, no, no, he's going to go through surgery. But they ended up doing the surgery until like that next day in the evening. That morning, I finally got some medication or got some water and I got to eat a little bit, but I was kind of pissed.
Yeah, lay there for what? A whole day without.
Yeah, that's brutal.
I can't even imagine. You still there? You went into surgery. After you broke your femur, laying there for like a day in pain, how'd surgery go and what was your recovery like?
I thought surgery went pretty good. And we headed to Mesquite and ended up staying in Mesquite. And I noticed my incisions were pussing a little bit. But the doctor said that was going to be normal. And then next day we went all the way back to Wyoming. And I think like 2 or 3 days later, after we were in Wyoming, I went to the clinic, and they ended up checking my incision, putting a swab on it, and they came back and told me I had an infection, and I didn't know what it was. They told me to go to the hospital immediately, so I went to the Lander Hospital, and they were kind of being careful around me, and they said I had MRSA.
Oh, no.
So they're like, where do you want to go? Salt Lake, Denver, or Billings, because they said they couldn't fix my femur or clean it, and they didn't really have experience with that, with MRSA and that stuff. And I told them Salt Lake. I didn't know how serious it was still. And they ended up throwing me on a plane, and I flew to Salt Lake that night. And I remember when I got there, the ambulance were wearing on suits, like full body suits.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh, maybe this is serious. Maybe not. Maybe they just kind of do this because they see a lot of people. I didn't really know what to think. And then we got to the hospital, got to my room, and everybody was wearing on suits that was coming in. And I was like, oh, this is pretty bad. Then my dad shows up. He just walks in with his regular clothes, and he doesn't know how serious it is either because we didn't know what MRSA was really.
Right.
At the time. And then I remember the doctor coming in, talking to me about the possibilities or the options I had. And then he said, most likely we're going to have to cut off your leg. I mean, amputate your leg.
Holy cow. What? Holy crap.
Yeah, he said that if this spreads to your whole body, there's no way we'll be able to fight it off.
Oh no.
Wow.
And I told him, and as he was sitting right there, I was like, whatever you do, please don't cut my leg off.
Yeah, and, try to save it.
Yeah. But I could see why, though. Like, nowadays, I, like, look it up, and people, like, die from it. Straight up die. Like, especially if it spreads any further than wherever it's infected.
So what'd they do? Just put you on a whole bunch of antibiotics and clean it out?
Yeah, they cleaned it out, put them on antibiotics. I ended up going home again after surgery. And I was taking those antibiotics. And then my incisions, they would still kind of like pus a little bit. But this was one of the best doctors at University of Utah. But anyways, it kept pussing. So I went back to the hospital. I do like checkups. And they're like, we're going to have to do another surgery to clean it out again. So I went through my second surgery. They ended up cleaning out the, like, whatever they clean. I don't know exactly what they clean, like the skin and the rod, the screws. Are you guys there?
Yes.
Oh, good. Yeah. I had to cut out again. And then, yeah, I went through that surgery again, and they cleaned everything. My leg was still there, so I was happy. And then
I'm sure.
I was still taking antibiotics, and they switched me to different ones, and I was taking quite a bit. And I was doing my normal checkups again in Salt Lake. And then I had to go through another surgery.
Wow.
Because it was still pussing and all that stuff. Cleaned it out again. And I think they take the rod out each time, like the screws. That's why like my knee's all like fucked up and my hip. But I seen how they take it out. They like beat it with a hammer. Because I watched some on YouTube in Europe because they won't post in the U.S.
Right.
And these are some good doctors in Europe. And I was like, holy cow, that's crazy.
Wow.
My like left side of my body kind of hurts all the time.
So how long were you off the bike before it healed enough to like ride again?
I think I raced that next Vegas to Reno, but I think like literally like 2 months before the race, I got cleared to like ride again. But anyways, I ended up, and then they said I had to do another surgery, and I was like, this is crazy.
So you're five surgeries in now.
No, four surgeries, sorry. Or yeah, four. Basically five, actually, yeah.
The original one and then four more. Wow. Yeah.
Or might only be four. No, it's five with the first one, but I don't really count the first one.
So that's pretty gnarly, dude. So then during all that, were you like, I'm not riding again or
at first I was. But
How'd you come back from an injury like that to ride as fast and as well as you do?
I don't know. Like, it's just mainly, honestly, like people were trying to say how I crashed and would kind of say like crazy crap like that. And then I'd see like whose kids they had or how fast they were, if they were on a team. And I went back to the Nationals that year and I beat them. Well, not the first year, 2016, but 2017, I went back and beat them.
Mm.
That's what motivated me. That sounds like bad motivation, but I was like, man, I'm just trying to kick back now. People are talking crap.
Yeah.
Like, oh, are you trying to race with David Pearson? You're riding over your head. And they'd make up all these excuses. And in 2017, I was trying to get on a ride again. But I think that crash is what, like, I think a lot of people heard about it because I was racing with David Pearson and nobody wanted to help me. Like, I straight up hit up like Pervine's Racing or like Robbie Bell and his team or any of these teams, but they all knew like David and what happened. And I think they just thought I wasn't ready. I'm not right. Too sure. I think it kind of messed up how my racing, I don't call it career anymore, just like racing, having fun, would have shaped out.
Right. Yeah.
Well, every time I got support, it gave me a lot of motivation. But the only support I had was my dad. So that's the only reason.
He's always been there for you and he's always your number one, huh? First.
Yeah. Like he loves racing. Like,
yeah.
He likes to go to the races. He likes seeing me and my sister happy, and he has plenty of other kids too that they all do their own thing that he helps a lot. And he just loved it. And I think the only way I got to where I am now is just because of how my dad helped me and supported me. And if it wasn't for him, I don't think I would have made it this far.
Yeah.
Or been this fast. Cause now I don't even ride, like, but I'm not, I don't say I'm fast, but I can ride decent.
You're pretty fast.
You're fast.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we're glad you saved the leg, and your racing has taken off from there as well, because the results show it.
Yeah.
And so you were down for about a year, or a little less than a year, and you got
back a little less than a year. Yeah. But I was still going on about the other stuff, but it's fine.
Oh.
I was gonna say, after that last surgery, they put in like bigger rods, bigger screws, plates everywhere, and they got bone from somewhere else. And that's when I finally started to heal. But anyways, when I woke up, that surgery messed me up, because like that's the first time I ever woke up like the world was like twisting, and I wasn't on any medications. Like 2 days after, I literally couldn't walk. Like I could feel the world twisting. It felt so weird.
Wow.
Yeah, and I was in so much pain too. But it healed, and then I got a PICC line in my arm. And I don't remember how long I had. I think I had like 4 or 5 months. And they told me to stay home, but as soon as I got out, went to Wyoming, got some antibiotics, but they put it through a PICC line. It was like a ball. And whoever I was getting it from, they gave me enough for like 2 weeks. So I ended up going to Reno to my cousin's like 2 days after surgery, and I drove all the way there. And I'd elevate it like every few hours from Wyoming to Reno.
The PICC line was just for like to administer
give me antibiotic.
Antibiotic, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I had to feed it. I'd have to do it every, I think it was 4 times a day, every 6 hours. So no matter the time, like 2 or 3 in the morning, I had to get up, put that ball on, clean it with saline and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Dang. And then stay awake until it was done, take it off, clean it. And it was pretty crazy. Like, and I think I turned kind of like a different color too. I might be exaggerating, but I remember like looking at myself in the mirror, I was kind of like a pale looking color, maybe a yellowish. I don't know. Yeah. So I was on the antibiotics for like 4 months straight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or with the PICC line. But it tastes pretty crazy, but you get used to it. Good taste in your mouth.
Right.
Every single time.
That's gnarly, dude.
Well, it worked. You still have your legs, so we're grateful for that.
Yeah, and then, I just tried to get back into racing. Like, I remember I raced a B class at my first race, and I think I got first because it was just AZOP, Arizona Off-Road Promotions. And then I think my second race was a works race, and I thought I was going to be fast again, and then I got last 250A. And I think, that was my second race. And I was so tired. Like, I was so eager to get back to racing. Like, I don't think I had enough strength to, like, push myself or anything, like my leg, my whole body, just from sitting around for that long. Because I got pretty skinny, like kind of sick looking, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever recovered, but I kind of like stay kind of skinny, but I'm finally gaining weight. But I remember, after that, I had a hard time like just recovering from everything.
Yeah. Oh, crazy.
So, after that, when did you get serious racing again? I mean, started getting fast again. It just kind of came back with each race, or what?
Yeah, it took longer. I thought, I don't know how people like get injured and like come back right away like me. Like, it definitely wasn't like that. Like, I think I raced as much as I could. Like, I was trying to get my speed back. I was still scared at times, like, of the dust and stuff, just because of what happened. I think it took me all the way end of 2016, after Vegas to Reno, all those races I did, and then some of 2017. But in 2017, I finally started to get my strength back. I don't know if I was faster or the same. I feel like I was faster in a different way.
Like smarter or?
I think I'm smarter now. I don't think I was smart then. I was more of like, I think I was in better shape.
Okay.
Yeah. Like in better shape than I was before the injury. Because before the injury, it was just like raw speed. Like I could go as fast as I want. I wouldn't get tired. It was kind of weird. But in 2017, I thought I was in better shape, but like I feel like I could push longer, and later in the races, that's where it counts, and I could slowly catch people. But I don't know. It's hard to say. But anyways, that year I got some like top 10 finishes in the Hare and Hound in 2017. And then I got asked by some Mexico team. It's not some Mexico team. Ulysses and Mark. They messaged me on Facebook. And I was like, man, who are these guys? Seems kind of sketchy. But it's always been a dream of mine to go down to Mexico and race like Dust to Glory.
So was that your first time racing down there, was with those guys?
Yeah, first time. That's my very first time, yeah.
Okay. And how did they find you? From work stuff or just from
Hare and Hound? Was all.
Hare and Hound?
Yeah, because I guess in the newspaper down there, I was in one of the newspaper. Taylor Steven gets top 10 and then said something on there or something.
Wow. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. And then I ended up going down to the race. And obviously I worked for my dad, so he gave me time off. And I was so excited. Ended up going down there. I was kind of nervous at the same time. They just gave me a piece of paper. I didn't know you could use your phone then or the GPX viewer to look at each VCP. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of down like maybe a week ahead of time. So there wasn't very good markings. And I ended up getting lost, and I found a service spot, and I text my dad. I was like, I'm lost. And I think it freaked everyone out in the States.
You're lost in the middle of Mexico.
Yeah. Like, I could go back to where I started pretty easy, but I was just like, holy shit, I'm already lost. Like, yeah. I couldn't find any of the course because we were like one of the first people down there pre-running. And I ended up turning around, and I seen Eric Yorba. I knew who he was because he was a fast works racer, like super fast.
Uh-huh.
And I asked him, hey, I'm lost. Can I follow you? And he let me follow him. And yeah, I ended up following him the rest of the section. And then that's where Ulysses and Mark found me. And they're like, what happened? I was like, I got lost in where I was going. And they're like, and then he was speaking to Eric's dad in Mexican and said, yeah, can you take Taylor and all this stuff? And the next day I ended up pre-running with Eric Yorba. I think we went like once or twice. I think we pre-ran that section three times that day. And the last time, and this was in the last time we ran it, I ended up going down, breaking my ulna in my wrist, and I broke my clavicle.
Oh, no.
But I was going, like, this was my third time doing it with him that day. And it was on the flattest road ever. It was between, I think it's Ojos and, dang, I can't remember that place where you eat. On the
Acambaro? Valley T.
No, it was Acambaro.
Oh, yeah. Okay, from Ojos to Acambaro, yeah.
Yeah, and there was, like, the flattest road ever. I haven't seen them race on it in a while, but flattest road ever. I was like third or fourth gear, really putting in. I was really looking around because it was my third time. I didn't get to look around yet. So I was just trying to keep up with Eric. And I was looking around. And I don't know what I hit or I don't know what happened, but the bike slid to the left, like kind of like a drift. And I tried to catch it and it went back to the right. Then it went back to the left. And then it like high sided and caught. And I just flew over the bike, landed on my wrist and my collarbone. And I was probably going like 20, 30 miles an hour. Flattest road ever.
Wow.
And that's when that happened. And then I was like, man, something's wrong. And Eric stopped for me. And I was like, yeah, I ended up crashing. going and keep going. And we went all the way back to the truck, and Ulysses and Mark were there again. And then I was like, I don't think I can race. Something's wrong. And then I ended up, they had to load up the bike for me because I tried to load it up. I couldn't push because my wrist and then my shoulder was in so much pain. And I could definitely feel something was wrong.
Hmm.
And then we got back to service in Ensenada. And I told my dad what happened. He's all, well, I guess I'll come pick you up or drive back if you can. And I was going to stay there that night. And I just kind of slept on it. Was really thinking about it. I remember I saw some pills from when I broke my femur. Cause like I said, I never took them after surgery.
All right.
Yeah. Then I was like, I might never get a chance like this ever again. Took a pill, pre-ran the next day, just didn't sit down. Cause the vibration, you could really feel it in the clavicle. And then my wrist, I just tried to go on a pace where you couldn't feel much vibration out of the handlebars. I just kept pre-running. And then race day, my dad came to, or day before the race, my dad came down. He's all, you're all right. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm okay. Cause everything was kind of starting to feel better a little bit, but it was broken. I didn't know it was broken too.
Oh
yeah. And then, race morning, I popped two ibuprofens. I got off the, I think it was tramadol. I was taking tramadol each day so I could pre-run.
Uh-huh.
And then I ended up racing the race. I think I started at 16th. I made it all the way to like 8th overall by mile 120.
Wow.
And then we were running 3rd in our class. Cause I think we started like, I don't remember, like 6th or 7th in our class. Maybe I made it to 2nd. I don't really remember. It was 3rd or 2nd because it was a long time ago.
What year was that? What year was this?
2017.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I got off the bike again. My sections were supposed to be longer. I think I was supposed to race half the race. And then they started switching bikes. Ulysses got on the bike. Mark got on the bike. Jared got on the bike. And then I got back on the bike. And then I told Mark, if I don't feel good, you have to race the last section from Ojos. And Mark ended up racing the last section because I wasn't like super pushing myself, but I was still catching people and making passes. And then we ended up getting 3rd behind some really good teams. So I think they had Monkey Business down there, but it was a different Monkey Business owner. And they made it all the way up to like 2nd or 3rd overall on the 350. Because back then, Pro Limited used to be 350. It wasn't 450.
Yeah, it was 399 and below, right?
Yeah, it was 399 and below. And we got 3rd, and I was so happy and excited. And then me and my dad just drove home right after the race. But during that whole time I was down there, like, I never enjoyed, like, each time I went down to Baja, I never enjoyed it. Like, I just went down there to do good because I knew I wasn't working and I could be on the bike. Because I don't get like the opportunity like other people, like they didn't have to work and then they could go racing.
Right.
So I took advantage of it.
Heck but yeah, dude.
I didn't enjoy it. The only time I enjoyed it was when I went down with Eric.
That was fun, huh?
Yeah. Because before that, it was just like pre-run, get, then it's dark, go back to the room, sleep, get up before the sun gets up, and go it's pre-run
like,
again.
Like a job.
Yeah, like a job, except on dirt bikes. But yeah, but anyway, yeah, that was my first time racing with those guys, and I'm very thankful for them for messaging me because I got to live out a dream. And but anyways, I got home after that race, and I was in the forklift. I was getting material, and this was in Casper, and I told my dad, I was like, something's not right still. Hmm. Like the vibration just hurt my collarbone and my wrist. Went to the hospital. And they said I had a styloid ulna fracture. And then I broke my clavicle. But they said it was already healing that fast. I'm like, wow.
Oh.
So they just left it. And they just put me in like a some kind of brace. But it wasn't like an actual brace where it holds your arm. It was like for my posture.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I wore that. And then I tried to come back racing after that. I took like a couple of months off. And I just lost all my speed. Like it was gone that quick.
Wow.
Yeah, I tried doing some races, and then 2018 came around. I got my Yamaha and tried racing again. I tried getting used to it. It was probably the weirdest bike I ever rode. It was very hard to get used to. I had to find settings for it. Luckily, there's this guy called NRS. I call him Navajo Racing Suspension. And he helped me out with suspension. And I'd just go there and take it out and said, this is wrong, this is wrong. And then we ended up going to everything stock on the forks. And we just softened the high speed. And he really knows what he's doing. Like, I watch him compared to some people. And he, like, bleeds all the air out of the forks. As I watch people do suspension, and they don't pump all the air out of the forks like he does. And he got, like, secret methods. Hopefully no one listens to this podcast. But, yeah, he got, like, stuff that, like, some of the guys in Utah don't have. Like, he makes the bike feel good. But anyways, we just softened the high speed really good. And we left the bike stock. What? And then I ended up finally doing good at the Nationals again, the Utah National. And I got a pretty decent start. I was like in – this is 2018, though. I think I was like in 8th or 9th. I made up to 8th or 9th. And then everyone got lost. And then I forgot who found the – I think it was Josh and I. He found the course first. So he was leading the National. I think I was in, like, 7th or 8th. And then I passed, ended up getting in front of Chance Fullerton. I think I got back in front of Ryan Smith. And then I passed Taryn Taylor. And then I caught up to Josh Knight. And then I passed him. I didn't know Kendall was behind me. And Kendall passed me, and I literally followed him for like 3 or 4 miles, and I was making no mistakes. And I remember going up this hill, and I dabbed my foot for like maybe probably like not even a tenth of a second, but to the pros that's like 10 seconds. Dabbed my foot, and he was gone. Like, I didn't see him again. Like, that's how good they are. They don't make any mistakes. But I was riding really good then. I was riding a lot. And then the rest of the race, I think I was in 5th overall or 4th overall at the National. And then I think Nick Burson took the wrong turn. I got in front of him, and I was in 4th overall for a little bit. And I was running a stock gas tank because IMS didn't make a tank yet for that bike, because 2018, the Yamahas were new and everything. Ended up running out of gas a mile before the pit, and that probably would have been my, best National finish, or coming into the first lap, I would have been 4th overall. Because first was, I think, Taylor Roberts. Second was Dalton Shirey. Third was Kendall Norman. Then it was me.
Wow.
Then ran out a mile before the pit. And then I had to go back to work in Wyoming. We were working even further. We were working about 7 hours away from where we live in Wyoming. Or no, not actually where we live in Utah. And that just burnt me out, like just – going to work, leaving work Thursday or Friday, most likely Friday, driving on 7 hours, 6 hours down here, however long it took, and then driving however long to the races, and then driving back here, and then driving 6 or 7 hours to work again. Like, it just burnt me out. And I think that year, I was in the same year. Actually, it was a different year. But it just, like, burnt me out on racing pretty quick. Like, I was just going to work, tried to go racing, and I lost a lot of speed again because I wasn't riding a lot. Like, I was just going to work. I didn't want to ride anymore because how much I was driving for work.
Right. So, you got a couple of championships, don't you?
I have, like, minor ones, like USRA Novice Championship, Amateur Championship. And I don't think I have any expert championships because every time I tried to get a championship, Josh Knight would beat me. He would get first, like 250 or first open or something, and I'd get like second.
Yeah, Josh is gnarly. He's a great rider. Yeah, he's a great rider. What about, didn't you guys win the Legacy Championship last year?
Yeah. Best in the Desert too.
399 Pro or?
Yeah, 399 Pro.
Yeah, so you got Best in the Desert Legacy.
Yeah.
And you didn't you get one in Ironman class too?
Yeah, I got that one. But I don't know. Those were just, to me, Best in the Desert and Legacy are just like fun. This is what I tell people. It's like fun retirement series. Like, it's just racing on a road.
Fast old guy series.
Yeah, fast old guy series. Because people are like, why do you race that series? Like, I don't know. It's like the only time I have fun now.
All right, but yeah.
I think we could have did better, but sometimes, like, I remember in 2017, we were chasing the Best in the Desert series, Open Pro, and I think we were second in points. I don't remember who was in first. It might have been Jacob. Or we were tied or something like that. And we raced Vegas Torino, me and Jared Schlapia. And I think we could have did good in the championship in that series, maybe second, maybe first, maybe not. I think we would have got second, but maybe not the championship. I remember Vegas Torino, we got like seventh overall or sixth overall. I don't remember exactly. And my dad was pretty pissed. And he's all, well, I'm not going to help you invest in the desert because we – I'm not going to pay a lot just to get sixth or seventh. So we ended up not racing the rest of the series, but I think we would have finished second Open Pro. I think every time I was doing good in a series, either I got burnt out and not wanted to go, or my dad couldn't help because I wouldn't be able to do Best in the Desert or Legacy without my dad because it's expensive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Super expensive.
Unless you got like three union guys that have super good jobs or two and can all pitch in.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, and then I think in 2019 I was kind of in the Moran contention for championship. And I forgot where I was driving to then, but it was about 6 or 7 hours from Ogden to over there. And I think I was supposed to work a race, Corn Dogs race. And I didn't know you had to work a race in that series until like I think a couple months before that race. I mean, honest, I think it's great people work races, but I don't know. This is just me. I don't think pros, if you're chasing a pro championship, you shouldn't have to work a race because I didn't want to drive that far. Like I was burnt out on driving just to work a race.
Right.
I think it's like 6 hours, nothing against you, Corn Dog, or like the series, but like it just burned me out in the driving and I ended up not going to that work that race. So I wasn't a championship anymore, so I don't think we chased the rest of them. I think we just hit like one or two more.
Right.
In 2019. My dad tried to make me go, but I was like, Dad, I'm done. Like, we gotta drive all the way back for work. We're gonna basically spend our whole weekend driving, race real quick. And I was just like, I don't know.
Yeah, you guys are pretty gnarly, like traveling all the way from Wyoming down to a lot of the Nevada series and
California,
and Baja, yeah. And Arizona.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know too many people that travel as much as you do.
Yeah.
To race.
But in the talking about 2019, I don't want to make Damon Bush look bad, but I think he was leading. I think he worked a race and I was leading in the points and everyone's like, why aren't you going to the race? I was like, honestly, it don't mean that much to me. Like, it's too far to drive just to, like, work a race and then chase the rest of the series.
Right.
Yeah, but I think I won a championship there. And there's – I think in 2018 we were doing pretty good in Vegas, Best in the Desert. We took second Open Pro again. But this was with some Eric Kirby and Zach Myers. But there could have been more championships, but I think the driving's honestly what – killed me the most. Like, it wasn't fun. And then I'd see people, like, I'm not gonna say the racer's name, but like they never had to work and it would just bother me. But
yeah,
but now I'm fine with it. Like, it don't matter anymore. Like, go have fun at the Legacy, Best in the Desert races, and don't mind working 40-hour weeks and then going all the way to the race or more.
Right. Do it while you're young.
Yeah.
it just gets harder.
Yeah, I don't have a kid yet, luckily.
Right.
I have a dog. The dog's a lot of work, and I was like, dang. Good thing I have Vista. She can wash the kid.
Right.
Yeah. you just take them with you.
I don't know how Eric does it, honestly.
Four daughters, dude. I don't know how I do it either.
And like eight jobs.
Yeah.
I just never sleep, I guess. Never quit.
Yeah. But anyways, yeah, like the Legacy and Best in Desert Championship, I was like, man, I really didn't chase any championships. Like my whole – I was like close to some, but I just kind of gave up on it because of driving. And I was like, you can't give up on these ones. This is – because I knew I was getting burnt out.
Yeah.
I'd be riding less and stuff like that.
Well, maybe you should move down here.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I'm kind of done anyways now for sure. I think unless I get like a really good deal next year, like I don't have to prep the bike and all that stuff.
Right.
I don't think I really want to do it again. It takes a lot of work.
Ask Dad if we can go back to Mexico and have some tacos.
He talked about the 1,000, but I was like, Dad, it's going to cost a lot. I was like, you might as well just build up your UTV or buy a spec truck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how's that been going? You guys kind of – Dad got a couple UTVs. He's been messing around there. How's that going?
It's pretty fun. Like, it's a lot of work. It's like a dirt bike, but way more work. And, like, if you don't know what you're doing, like us kind of, there's, like, a lot of stuff to learn.
You got four wheels to maintain instead of two?
Yeah, but everything breaks easier too.
Yeah. Like way easier. Yeah, and those things aren't cheap either.
Right on. You still there?
Sorry.
There you are.
But I try to go slow now when I race his UTV because if I break something, I don't want to pay for it.
Right.
It's a lot of money because last time, I think it was in 2019 or 2020, there was a Mesquite USRA race and they allow UTVs. I had a bad start and I started catching up and then I seen him and I went off the trail and I was kind of pinning it through the dust and I hit a ditch and I bent his frame.
Oh.
Yeah, luckily he didn't get too mad. I never had to pay for anything, but I was like, I'm not going to do it again because next time he's probably going to make me pay.
Yeah.
Now I just kind of – I try to go fast, but I'm, like, really safe. Like, I slow down on a lot of stuff. Like, but it's super fun. I want to get my own, but I'm trying to get some other stuff ready in my life. So.
What do you do for work?
I work for my dad. We put up steel buildings. We're a really small company. And, yeah, that's basically it. We just – put up schools, hospitals, anything with steel and whatever my dad wants to get. Cause usually he gets the jobs. It's just like, yeah. Sometimes they don't line up right. And then we have like three jobs going on at once. Pretty frustrating. It's definitely hard. I don't think it's like what people think. People probably think, oh, Taylor and his dad probably don't even go to work. Shoot. I went to work for like some other people here in Utah. I'm not gonna tell their name, but it's the easiest thing I ever did. Like the easiest, like the stress. I can't imagine what the stress my dad goes through, but I feel like we work like Mexicans. We went to a union job once. I was operating a crane there and they had like four or five people trying to set one column. And then with us, we do it with like maybe the crane operator, then someone rig it, put it in.
Two people in a backhoe.
In the backhoe. No. Then we just use a crane and yeah, because I work for other, like I said, I work for other people and it's been so easy working for someone else.
Right.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Really, I wish it was easy, like people said, but because some people are like, do you have to go to work? Or isn't that so easy? Like, can't you just take over? He has everything lined out. Like, it's more like my dad does all his own paperwork, his own bids. He does all the paperwork. He's all, this is racing money. If I paid someone else to do it, there'd be no racing money.
Right. Yeah.
But, yeah. So I don't want to do what he does. And it's, yeah, like, just, you know how construction is, like, dealing with the people. I mean, I don't mind dealing with people because then you can say stuff back to them at construction job sites, but then I don't want to deal with that the rest of my life. Right. Especially if you're a company owner. That's my dad. Yeah.
Politics, dude.
Yeah.
Well, so what's in store for the Taylor Stevens here in the future? What do you just race what you can, having fun or what?
Yeah, pretty much just race when I can, have fun, and like I'm kind of done. Like I said, riding, and riding's still super fun. I haven't been riding a lot lately. Just maybe I need to go ride and have some fun, because I just, like I said, I feel burnt out. I never thought I'd get burnt out at such a young age, but it's really bad now. Like after the Baja Nevada race I raced with against Eric, my rider ended up going down. Well, not my rider, but the team rider, Wyatt Brittner. And I didn't even touch the bike. Yeah, one of my teammates. And I didn't even touch the bike until like a couple of days before Vegas Torino. I finally washed off the dust. I looked at it. And I was like, man, it's going to be a lot of work, but I'm glad Wyatt's okay. But like, that's just how I've been lately. I haven't been into like riding or bikes. I don't know.
I think we've all gone through that period of in our racing, that we just get a little burned out. We just got to step back for a minute and regroup, and it'll come back. You'll start jonesing to want to get out there and ride and race. And
yeah, it's all about balance, I think. I mean, just like everything in life, you know, even our riding side needs balance, and sometimes a little time away does the heart and soul some good. So, but yeah, no, we've all been there.
Yeah.
I would like to go down to Baja again, but I think this time the deal has to be like really good, really solid team. All the times I've been down, I've been down with great riders, solid teams, but just one more time just to try it again before I get over 30 and if 2 more years.
Right.
Yeah. Dust to glory style.
Yeah, dust to glory style. I don't know if I can ride as fast as Eric does at his age, but because aren't you almost 40, Eric?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be I think I'm 39 right now. I'll be 40 in November. I'm getting old, dude.
Yeah.
But age is just a number. Keep pinning it.
Yeah. You definitely pin it. Like, I remember Bonavada, you were hauling.
Yeah.
I try, but.
Yeah. But anyways,
I don't know. For me, it's still fun. I just, as long as I'm having fun, I'm going to keep, you know, I want to do good, you know. I want to see myself improve and just results. And really, it's just about kind of pushing myself to see how far I can go or what I can do. But the day that I'm not having fun anymore, then I'll do something else, you know?
Yeah. But I kind of cut out a lot of stories, but thanks for having me on, you guys. And
Yeah, I'm sure we've all got stories we don't talk about, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I forgot a lot of stuff I was speaking. I was like, I'm going to be like one of those books that have too many flashbacks. And then just leave it.
You did good. I'm sure there's more stories in there. We could do another episode sometime, but. We really appreciate having you come on, man. It's a good show. Love seeing you guys, your family at the races, and tell your family hello. And
yeah.
Yeah. Love seeing you guys too. Miss seeing you, Corndog.
Yeah. And get on down here and let's ride.
Yeah. I thought about that Nevada 200 looks pretty fun. And then aren't you guys doing like another group ride?
We're probably postponing it till next year, 2023, just so we can get everything legalized and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll head up your way and go riding up there in that country.
In Wyoming or Utah?
Wherever you want to take me.
It's mostly just turn tracks, short turn tracks.
Oh, okay.
I don't have much. Yeah.
Any time on the bike is a good time.
Yeah. Every time we take people riding, or new people come out and ride with us, they complain. They're like, "Oh, why are we riding turn tracks? It's so rough." But when you're trying to get fast, you got to ride that stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I need to be better at turns. Let's do it.
We'll come up to the Stevens Off-Road Academy and learn,
learn how to turn.
I don't think there's anybody in that academy anymore. Yeah.
All right, buddy. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show, and we hope to see you soon and tell everybody we said hi.
For sure. It was great talking to you guys, and thanks for letting me be on your podcast. I feel like we should redo it again. I should write everything down so I put it in order. So it seems like a good podcast.
No, that's boring. This is way better.
Yeah, this is good.
But I listen to your guys' podcast a lot. Only the main writers I know.
Yeah, they're all pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, like in my era.
Right.
Now you guys record some older people. But, yeah, I like listening to you guys' podcast, and I think it's very cool. Sometimes I have questions for them, but lately, I don't know. I think I scroll through Instagram too fast and don't see it, that you guys are going to have podcasts with someone.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to post on there for questions and stuff again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good.
Who's the next person?
We still got to get – we're lining a couple people up. We're waiting for some confirmations.
Yeah, we still got to get Nick Garvin on here and a couple others that we had talked to. So,
yeah.
Heck yeah.
So.
All right.
Well, thank you, buddy. All right. Well, you have a good night. Be safe.
All right, Taylor. Cool. See ya.
Yeah. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Taylor, for coming on the show. Great show, man. It's always fun bench racing and sharing stories with our guests. Thank you all for tuning in. Another episode in the books. Hit us up on our social media, Facebook, Instagram. Send us an email to the Desert Dirtbiker Podcast. TikTok. Corn Dog's on the TikTok now. So, anyway, yeah, thank you all for listen to another show. We'll be back next week with another guest, hopefully. And until then,
going riding.
Get out. The dirt's wet. Hopefully it's wet in your area, but it's definitely wet here. So
it's pouring out there right now, huh?
Yep. You're going to have a good ride in the morning with all this wet dirt. It's unbelievable.
If it's not still pouring.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, it'll let up. You'll have a good day tomorrow, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
While I'm working. But anyway.
I'm working. That's my job now. Yeah. Adventures.
Yeah. You're the adventure guy. Is that moto van done yet or what?
I'm actually going to go see my buddy Monday, I think, and try to figure out the wiring and start installing wiring so I can panel it up.
You said you got new tires and rims coming. You're going to get the wiring done. You got graphics lined up.
Yeah, I got Pin Motorsports, my buddy Ty Sharp over there.
Cool.
Designing something, so I'm waiting for a proof and a price. Hopefully he doesn't kill me.
Yeah, no, it's tough. Everything's expensive nowadays, but anyway.
Looks like we are maybe going to Baja in November.
Yeah.
Working on some deals, kind of got an invite, so more details to come.
You know, it's pretty cool, the people we've met and run into and had, you know, reach out to us because of this podcast. And
amazing.
You know, just a simple idea of wanting to capture the history of off-roading and give back to the people that have given so much to this sport and businesses that support the sport and support us. And it's been an awesome journey. I think we got a lot more podcasts in us for the future, and looking forward to seeing where this thing goes. But thank you all for listening, and hopefully you're either out in the shop working and prepping your bike, or you're getting ready to go for a ride, or you got a ride planned, something. But we all share the love of moto, and
we have a sickness.
Yeah, it's great. So yeah, hopefully we'll make it to Mexico in November. I am in the middle of up in the air of whether we're racing Baja the 1000 this year in November. So depending on how that goes and lines up, and you know, when I can get down there, we might be going down a week or two beforehand to do a little ride. So anyway, I'm always down to go to Mexico.
It's on my bucket list. Tacos, looks like it's getting closer.
Tacos and dirt bikes. I don't know if anything gets much better. So, all right, guys. That's the end of this show. Thank you again, and we'll catch you on the next one.
See you at the races.
Thank you for listening to the Desert Dirt Biker Podcast. Make sure you tune in next time.